I'd like to convene the Finance Committee. We just found out that there was a problem last week where the server was down for, what, 2 days, Joanna? And so some members may have not been aware, but we do have folks from both caucuses here, even though we're a little short of a quorum. What I will do, we won't take any motions, but we'll have a presentation of the bills, and then as soon as we have a quorum, we'll revert back to taking the formal action on the bills. So, Representative Pawlowski, if you could present your bill, and then we'll just wait to take up the division report, and also I guess you have an amendment that we'll have to wait on as well, but why don't you explain it as though the amendment were on, if it's a crucial part of it.
Mr. Chair, members, House File 2899 does not have a fiscal note. Representative Kahn, I believe, requested it so that she could put on a report by OAH, and that report was put on in State Government Finance. The amendment, which is the A8 amendment, simply clarifies that this revolving account, which has existed since 1974, will be the account that the money will be put into. And that's pretty much the bill and the amendment.
Okay, what we'll need to do then, are there any questions of any of the members present? Okay, if there are none, Representative Pawlowski, we'll just wait until we get a quorum, and then we'll take action. Representative Mullery, House File 2499. And Representative Mullery, you heard what I was saying. The server was down, so we're waiting on a quorum.
So just go ahead without any formalities.
That's right. Just present the bill, and then we'll revert back to it as soon as we get a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Basically, this came out of a study that Deed did, and they worked closely with Minsky on it a few years ago, and it was... It was originally directed to help, and I worked to help with the African American community in poverty, and I worked with the Council of Black Minnesotans at the time. And one of the ideas was that we should have more certificate programs that were shorter so that people could get into work and get a working, and then they could go back and get other things, and to tie them more into jobs. And so this just would be suggest that the Minsky work with business and labor and faculty on this whole proposals, and Minsky is already doing a lot of this, and this would just tie it in together in a report. And we have here a person who's working on it with Minsky, if you'd like to hear from her.
Okay, go ahead, and if you could identify yourself.
Sure. Chair Carlson and representatives, my name's Joanne Simser. I'm the current State Director of Career and Technical Education in Minnesota and System Director for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. We are working currently on a number of different initiatives that certainly support this effort. We're developing programs of study within career pathways in the 26 consortia of colleges and high schools throughout the state. Every college and every high school district is a member of a consortia. We are doing a project this year to identify technical skill assessments within those programs of study. In health, therapeutics, criminal justice, computer networking, agriculture, plant systems, and in accounting. The programs of study allow for transition from secondary to post-secondary, and also that result in a credential, in a certificate, a diploma, or a degree. We have a study group that's working on the adult transitions to programs of study for dislocated workers and also people making transitions. We've been working with American Adult Basic Education, Department of Education, and with DEED in the Fast Track Initiative that puts together stackable credentials so that people can enter the workforce and continue to work and go to school. We're finding that our students are certainly lifelong learners that swirl out of education and work. So with all the changes in the workforce, it's become very, very important for us to maintain our good working relationships with business and industry. We're revising our program advisory committee handbook. We'll do regional trainings the end of April for all the colleges and school districts, and looking at program advisory committees within those career pathways. So it's certainly in line with the type of work that we're doing.
Can I ask, because you mentioned all the degrees, if someone earns a certificate, would most of that work, if they decided to continue on and earn a diploma, count toward the diploma? And if they earn the diploma, would that count toward the AS degree? I'm interested in the latter concept.
Yes.
And I understand the goal of this bill is to make more certificates available, but sometimes the students needs go beyond that.
Mr.
Chair, do you want to address that, Representative Mullery?
Mr. Chair, the goal of this bill is both of them. In fact, it's specifically major part of it was to make the certificates available quicker, but then to make a ladder so that they can get to work with the certificate and then build the ladder and go up to first to livable wage jobs and then much better jobs later.
Okay. The other part of my question then is I hear that on some of the campuses it's viewed as a negative if a student earns their license and doesn't complete the AS degree, because sometimes there are certain courses that are needed for the AS degree that are not needed for a license, and that sometimes is viewed as a negative. And if you could comment, either one of you, on that. I could give you some examples, but basically I assume you're aware that there are a lot of programs where the license is the primary goal of the student and not necessarily an AS degree. And yet one of the arguments I hear for closing programs is that not enough students are earning their AS degree. Is that something that the committee would be looking at?
Well, we currently have a number of situations where that career ladder is actually in place. The certificate counts towards the diploma, counts towards the degree. One of the things that we continue to hear from industry groups is the need for communication skills, for problem solving, for math. I think the colleges have been looking at how they assess student learning and how they bring together their liberal arts and sciences and their technical courses to be contextual in nature and to help support the needs of the workers and the needs of the industry.
I'm not sure that you're answering my question.
Okay.
You have a student that goes through a program, earns enough credits to get licensure, earns enough credits to pass the test.
Sure.
But doesn't complete the AS degree. And then I hear some college presidents will say, well, even and I've heard examples of programs that have 100% placement that are caught in that situation. And then the president says, but your completion relative to an AS degree is not high enough, therefore we're going to have to close your program.
Usually,
if you're not taking a look at that, I think it's important that you do that. And
well,
one of the technical colleges where that is happening that I've gotten feedback is Minneapolis Community Technical College, where they have a strong desire that the students complete an AS degree, even though they've earned licensure, they're out employed, and haven't completed whatever the difference between licensure is and the AS degree.
Well, that is one of the things that's taken into consideration with closing programs, certainly is the employment. And in many of those programs, the licensure component is the credential for the certificate or the diploma. And usually students have a choice whether they do that or not. We'll certainly take a closer look at what's happening with Minneapolis.
And there are other places, but that's okay. The one I've heard most of. And I don't know if Representative Mullery has heard about that as well. But
Mr. Chairman, I've heard a lot of complaints about what's being done to technical courses at MCTC, that it's not supporting the community as well on those issues, and a lot of people on both north side and south side and suburbs are not getting the technical courses that used to be there.
Okay, are there any other questions of Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mullery, did I hear you say that these groups are already getting together and talking through these things?
Representative Mullery.
In your opening comments, Representative Mullery, I believe you said that they were getting together already and starting these discussions. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, I believe they are, at least. Somewhat of it.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mullery, how much is this study going to cost the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Biskins, my understanding is it's not. They're already doing that work.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Mullery, if they're already doing this work and there is going to be no cost to the taxpayers of Minnesota, what's the need for the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, to coordinate the different studies going on, come out with a report to the legislature.
Thank you.
Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, if they're going to already be doing this work, I'm sure they're not doing it just to put it into a drawer and hide it away. I think they're probably going to send us a report, so I'm not quite sure why we need language written into law for something that's already being done that will cost nothing, right? And whose groups are probably going to be motivated to share with legislators the results of the work that they're doing.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Mullery, I'm always interested in ideas that have the potential to transform state government. I'm not sure that this one necessarily does, but it is studying some things that I think are really good things in terms of the alignment. I agree with Representative Biskins in terms of legislative need to do this versus the folks who are already out there making some moves. I appreciate that. One of the things that that I'm curious about is related to the study or related to a variety of studies is whether there's been consideration to co-location of high schools on the sites of these community college or technical colleges. It's my understanding in some other states there's been some programs that a student can essentially earn their high school degree at the same time as they earn an AA or an AS degree through a co-location of a magnet type school approach. And I'm really intrigued by that idea because there's a lot of these students who don't have the money necessarily to go immediately to school, don't have the money to stay in school, and if there's an opportunity to provide them both degrees at the same time, that seems like something that would be more transformational than just an alignment of programs. I'm curious if there's any thought to looking at a program like that here in Minnesota, or if there's anything already occurring here in the state. I know it's occurring in New Mexico and another number of other states throughout the nation. I think it's an intriguing idea.
Chair Carlson and Representative, there currently is a high school within the Anoka-Hennepin School District, the STEP program, the Secondary Technical Education Program, which is both a comprehensive high school and a technical high school that's located on the grounds and next to adjoining Anoka Technical College. St. Paul College has a career academy where the students come to the college and take courses in computer networking, in health, and in video production at the college. Rochester is looking at such a high school, and they've had some bonding bills in to help support that, which have not yet been approved. So there certainly is interest in that type of relationship within the state of Minnesota, and there are different ways of approaching that connection with high school and college. I think one of the things that each consortia, local consortia, needs to do every year is to submit a state plan and to report on that plan. That plan goes to the U.S. Department of Education for their Perkins funding, and in those plans there are several consortia that are looking at the opportunities for what they might call career academies or for co-located high schools and colleges.
Just to follow up, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, in the Anoka situation, though, are they earning both degrees?
Some of the students are.
Okay.
The other thing that exists in Minnesota is, as you know, with post-secondary enrollment option, that's been available for quite some time. So concurrent enrollment is available, and students are. Some students are earning both degrees at the same time. That's a relatively small number, but many students are taking courses in concurrent enrollment that then apply towards their college degrees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have at least one more person has a question, but we've had a quorum for a while, so I'm going to make a couple of motions, and then we'll recognize Representative Clark. So the chair moves that the Higher Education and Workforce Development Finance Division report for House File 2499, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The chair moves that House File 2499, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This sounds like a good bill. I just want to ask you which labor unions might have you envisioned or already started working with this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, the faculty, of course, were very interested in being part of it, their unions. The building trades unions are already trying to be part of it and working, discussing with it. There's other unions that have expressed some interest in it.
So, Chairman, I just want to put in a pitch for the nurses organization and maybe some of the other professional organizations like that. I think would be really important because those career ladders are just really essential. Thank you.
Very important.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor that House File 2499, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We now will revert back. For those of you that arrived a little late, and I understand why the server was down for a couple of days, so Representative Pawlowski has already presented his bill. Representative Kahn, would you care to move the division report?
Okay, I'll move the State Government Finance Division report for House File 2899, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Pawlowski, would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, members, I'll move.
Oh,
that
excuse me. Wait a minute. We have to vote on that motion. I'm getting
motion,
it's early in the morning.
Yeah. Before we act on it, I really want people to note the exceptional set of authors on this bill, representing a far breadth of the philosophy of this House.
Okay, we have a wide range of viewpoints. All right, which should enhance its support. All those in favor of the division report signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now, Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, members, I'll move that House File 2899, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Does anybody have any questions on the bill?
We haven't yet.
You've got an amendment?
I have an amendment. I have the A8 amendment, and as I explained, this just clarifies that the special account is the administrative hearings account.
Okay, the motion.
And I'll move the amendment.
The motion is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Pawlowski renews his motion then at House File 2899, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair. I move adoption of the minutes of the 39th meeting.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Now we have Representative Norton's bill before us, so the chair moves that the Higher Education and Workforce Development Finance Division report for House File 3048, the second committee engrossment. Any discussion on the report? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried, 1-0. Representative Norton, I'll move then the bill. I move the House File 3048, the second committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register, and I hope you get a stronger vote than on the division report. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an agency bill from the Department of Labor and Industry. It's technical in nature. I don't know if you want, I would guess you don't want to walk through the entire bill. There's 30-some sections, and the changes are quite technical. I can tell you it's been through four committees now and has had no opposition. The Department of Labor and Industry worked with the Builders Association of Minnesota, the pipe fitters, the unions, and others, and no one has expressed any concern at this point. So I don't know how much more detail you would like. Would you like me to walk through it, or would you like...
Well, just tell us what the general direction of the bill is.
Well, the bill is construction codes and changes a variety of technical changes. Some it allows information to be put out electronically rather than mailed. It sends notification to municipalities when construction codes change rather than to cities and counties. It wasn't getting to the municipalities necessarily. It defines plumber's apprentice, and because the plumber's apprentice program was in two different divisions, Health and Human Service, or the Department of Health, and Labor and Industry, and they were called different things in both of those committees, both terminologies are placed in this language so that there's less confusion. It goes through some changes in law. They were put in the last amendment that clarifies what an owner is and how complaints are handled within the department. It describes the roles of the commissioner and how they can recoup costs through a lawsuit, and that if funds are recouped, that they go back into the fund. As I said, mostly technical in nature. At the end, there are some repealers. Safety glazing, because it's no longer available, has been repealed, the language on that. And then, of course, the effective date, which is following enactment.
Okay. Are there any questions on the bill? Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Solberg. I see that you have a question on Section 20 on page 9. First of all, what are we talking about? Which revenues are we talking about on the surcharge?
If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Tom Joachim, Assistant Commissioner of the Department. The Section 20 deletes an annual report that we were required to start probably about 10, 12 years ago, to report just on one of the revenues that the department gets, which is the surcharge revenue. We've been issuing this November 30th report every year. We have to go through the same process when we go through our budget process, so it was a report that seemed redundant to us, and we're just going to eliminate the one-year report and maintain it on our budget cycle every 2 years.
Surcharge is it?
It's a surcharge, Mr. Chair, committee, Representative. Every jurisdiction that administers our state building code, on every permit they issue is a state surcharge, which funds a portion of our office to adopt the codes, providing code interpretations, enforcement of the code. So it's an overall surcharge on all building permits, mechanical, plumbing, electrical permits that are issued across the state.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, I'm a little concerned about having this get lost in the budget document, I may have some questions on it. I want to have some study on it. Just let you know that as this goes through, I want to see exactly if it is a redundant report or one that's used by our staff.
Okay, I represent...
Well, Mr. Chairman, my concern is that this seems to be funding the department. Yeah, and at least I think we should have some transparency in that, other than in just the budget itself.
Yeah, did you say, Joy?
Mr. Chair, a representative, it's, the surcharge right now is about $2.5 million of our $24 million budget.
Yeah, I don't, Mr. Chair, I don't mean it's the budget, it's the whole department itself, but I mean that section that deals with this is obviously being funded from that surcharge, and it's good to keep track of the money all the time.
We've had Representative Language, or Representative Solberg Language dealing with that reporting. Maybe that can be added at some point. I think that's the question you're raising, so that it can be monitored, or...
Well, Mr. Chair, it is right now being reported on an annual basis. They're taking that out, and I want to just have some time with the fiscal staff to see what that change will have as far as it relates to the legislative process.
Okay. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Norton, you may be aware that Representative Mahoney's been moving legislation, which is a little bit more controversial than I think this one is, dealing with the state building codes and the words different from and not in conflict with. Can you give me assurances that that issue isn't being dealt with here in these 39 sections of this bill?
I certainly can, Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins. These bills have been kept separate on purpose. One is more controversial. This is simply an agency bill, and I can assure you they're not commingled.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Clark.
I just have a kind of a general question, and I don't know if you covered this in your description of the bill originally, but for example, in Section 25, all the details of what a plumber's apprentice is are now taken out of the statute, and they're put only into a Minnesota rules reference. Is that a good idea? I mean, is that, what's the reason for doing that sort of thing?
Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chair, Representative, about 5 years ago, the governor signed a reorganization order to consolidate all of the construction codes into the Department of Labor and Industry. So I was originally in Department of Administration. We moved to Labor and Industry. The Health Department Plumbing Unit moved to Labor and Industry. The Board of Electricity, Contractor Recovery Fund, Contractor Licensing. At the time, the Department of Labor and Industry had an apprenticeship program in the department, and the Department of Health had an apprenticeship program in the Plumbing Unit. It was confusing, but not so confusing, because at least different agencies had different apprenticeship programs. When we consolidated, we had one agency with two apprenticeship programs. And really, the apprenticeship program in the health department is really an unlicensed individual that's registered with the department. So we attempted to change the term a couple years ago, didn't meet with success. We met with the industry to say, okay, let's continue to classify their apprenticeship program that is an apprenticeship program through our labor standards unit as an apprenticeship program, and let's change the term apprentice in the rest of the plumbing program to a registered unlicensed individual, because that's really what we are. We are just tracking their hours in that program. So we wanted to change that term. So this section 25 just references back to the apprenticeship program through the labor standards units to make sure that to be qualified as an apprenticeship program, you have to meet their qualifications underneath their rules for an apprenticeship program.
So, Mr. Chairman, so if I understand you correctly, those specifics are still, they're part of the Minnesota rules that are referenced here, and they're just not in the statute anymore.
Mr. Chair,
and you're combining two. The result of your combining that is to do that is to make it a rule rather than a statute.
Representative, yes.
Okay, Representative Kahn.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, usually when we have a bill with extensive repealers, the repealed statutes are reprinted, and we don't have it for this. I don't even know if the repealed rules are reprinted. I don't know what what changes when that happens and when it doesn't happen, but it's been kind of useful to have.
We're just talking here. Mr. Marks, you made a... Where might they be?
Mr. Chair, it may be because it's a committee engrossment as opposed to the one of the official engrossments, but we don't have one of those with us. So.
Mr. Chair, if I can review those. I have a slight write-up about each of the repealers if you'd like to hear them.
No, I don't really. Just like them attached to the bill, which you've become accustomed to having.
That has usually been what the case is, as Representative Kahn points out. We just don't happen to have them here.
Well, since this bill is going to Ways and Means, we'll have them.
We'll make sure that it's attached for the next stop. Okay, any further discussion? If not, then the chair renews its motion that House File 3048, the second committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg. It has to go to Ways and Means. I don't think there's any appropriation in there other than the one I thought that I was concerned about, and that's a report as opposed to an appropriation. So I don't think it needs to go to Ways and Means, the bill.
Okay.
I don't think that does.
Yeah, the motion is the general register.
Yes.
So you concur with that is what you're saying is chair Ways and Means. Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Representative Camp. And Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I move the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division report for House File 2925, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the division report is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 2925, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and place on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Kath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before you is the PFA's technical changes bill. They have a series of things, 16 sections in general, that deals with some comprehensive technicalities within the PFA funding, as well as some opportunities to make sure that we are aligning better state PFA funds with federal funds that are coming through. Specifically, then, the 16 sections look at ensuring that we are best able to utilize the funds for clean water revolving fund, the wastewater infrastructure fund, as well as some small community wastewater treatment programs. Within that, then, I've got a representative from the PFA here who can, you know, walk through the bill if that's what you would like, or we can just open it up for questions as well.
Okay. Are there any questions? Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I may, I ask a question of Ms. Novak regarding this bill? And Representative Kath, I just saw it now, so I'm not trying to create a problem here. I just, sections 13, 14, and 15, pages 10 and 11, I'm just wondering if this bill should have gone through taxes. Generally, members know that public or state bonding is one thing, but local bonding is another, and that's usually carried in the public finance article called the tax bill. And I'm just wondering if Ms. Novak can comment, because it's changing a little bit for cities and counties, if this is just purely technical, if there's something substantive here. I think if it's minor, it's okay to keep going, but generally I think those provisions would go through the tax committee.
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lincheski, sections 13 and 14 appear to be relatively technical. Section 15 is an increase in the bonded authority under the public facilities authority. It doubles the amount that they can have outstanding. That's a substantive change.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I may ask Ms. Novak again, so doubling the authority, I think it's lines 11.25 and 26, for the PFA, Isn't that both state and local projects, sort of a blend of the two committees?
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jeff Freeman with the Public Facilities Authority. Sections 13, 14, and 15 relate to the credit enhancement program. This is not the PFA programs where we're selling bonds and financing projects directly with local governments. This is the program through which the state provides a limited backing of city and county general obligation bonds for counties. It's jails, law enforcement facilities, some public service facilities, and for cities, it's sewer, water, stormwater projects that aren't being funded directly by the PFA or another. So the increase in the debt obligation in Section 15 is the amount of the contingent liability of the state to back these bonds. They're only backed to the extent that a city or county would be unable to meet a debt service payment and that there would be general funds available in the state general fund to step in and make a debt service payment for a city or county, in which case then the city or county through the general obligation pledge would be required to repay the state with interest through a tax levy or state aid intercept. This is very similar to the program that's in effect for school districts issuing debt. It allows cities and counties to receive a higher bond rating because of that state backing than they otherwise would. So the cities and counties save some money on interest costs. It doesn't cost the state anything. There's never been a default or a need to step in and make that payment.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I just, and then I think I understand it now, so just further to under the final pledge or the final authority when all else fails will be the local property taxpayers, not the state property taxpayers. Is that correct?
Correct. The state steps in temporarily and then gets mm-hmm. repaid.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kath, as I look through the bill, it seems to me that we're looking at almost, not almost, but creating the PFA into a new department statutorily and no longer under the purview of, where is it now? Is it under deed? Is that correct?
Yeah, as you're taking a look at it, there are some sections that deal with staffing, which then necessitates that we kind of change the umbrella, if you will, about the PFA and staffing needs to make sure that we are contractually meeting the obligations of bondholder covenants. But I can turn that over to the PFA to explain that a little further if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, thank you. I don't need to explain it. I think I get it. The other thing is that it looks like we are expanding the use of the Clean Water Revolving Fund, bringing more uses for that fund, as well as, I believe, WIF funds. Is that correct on both accounts, that we are expanding the use of those two funds?
Yes, we are, right. Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Kath, I just look at in this day and this time to be growing government is befuddling to me, number one. Number two, I wasn't aware that either the Clean Water Revolving Fund or the WIF funds had excess dollars where they need to be looking at more uses because they've got so much surplus laying around. I wasn't aware of that either. So I'm concerned about this bill on both counts, and I hope we move very slowly, and it looks like we might have a re-referral here coming, but we'll see.
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, the changes to the Clean Water Revolving Fund are entirely in order to comply with federal law, which in the 2010 federal appropriation requires that a specific amount or minimum amounts be expended in the form of what the term they use, principal forgiveness, for affordability issues and water and energy efficiency projects. In order for us to fully use the federal funds, we have to make these changes to our state statute for the Clean Water Revolving Fund, which right now is only authorized to make loans. This is very similar to last year we were before you. The federal era stimulus funds had similar requirements for principal forgiveness. The bill that was approved last year made one-time changes very similar to this to be able to use those era stimulus funds. These changes now would make that a permanent feature of the program to the extent it's permitted and required under the federal law. The changes to the WIF program do not expand that program at all. It simply changes the WIF from the deferred loan that it currently is to a grant. This is the way the WIF program was prior to 2002. Wow. There were some changes made in 2002 to the present, but these changes back to a grant will then better fit with the federal approach with the Clean Water Revolving Fund money and the term of the federal loans. It'll allow us to better target the WIF dollars to the communities with the serious affordability problems, which is the purpose of the WIF. So there's no expansion. It simply changes the type of assistance.
Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. As I'm reading the memo from the nonpartisan research staff, it looks like there is a change in how the WIF dollars can be used. It says that the bill expands the use of WIF funding for pre-design costs and can include purchase of land and easement. And that seems to be new language, which would expand the use of the WIF funding. But that being one thing, you know, as a person who has spent his career in education, and as Chairman Pawlowski, I think, would agree with me on, be careful of the strings that the feds put on all of their funding, and I can recite outcome-based education, no child left behind, etc. When we give up our sovereignty to chase a few federal dollars, we oftentimes end up regretting it. So you're looking at permanent state law for changing state law permanently so that we can accept a few bucks that the federal government might be throwing our way is a dangerous thing for us to be doing. So I do urge caution as we move forward.
Mr. Freeman, I have a question. And it goes back to the question that Representative Lincheski raised. Is there a state obligation potentially with those funds?
With respect to the credit enhancement program?
Well, that raising the bonding level, the doubling of the bonding level, would there be a potential state obligation? The reason I'm raising the question, members, is that while the discussion was going on, I was looking at the rule dealing with the capital investment division, and essentially the relevant part, it says a House or Senate bill that directly and specifically affects debt obligations or capital projects of the state must be referred to the Finance Committee Division on Capital Investment before the bill receives its second hearing or reading. And so the question I'm posing, this is, the rule is a little bit vague here. It says state obligations. So what I want to get from you, Mr. Freeman, if there is a state obligation potentially, then this would have to go to potentially to Representative Hausman's division. And if there's any doubt, I would rather do it now rather than the question being raised on the House floor. So, Mr. Freeman,
Mr. Chair, there is no direct state obligation. The state pledge is a limited pledge only to the extent that there's money in the state general fund to back a debt obligation issued by a city or county. There's no direct bonds issued by the state for this program.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, I've been sitting here struggling since I asked the question. I've actually sent a couple notes up to folks on other floors who aren't here yet, because if my concern is if it's a increase for local debt, then my committee should see it. If it's a state debt, then Representative Hausman's committee should see it. And I still have not been able to really ascertain what's going on here. And I think Representative Kathy, you're just trying to do a fairly small minor bill, but I have the same sort of feeling that, you know, you don't want to get to the floor and then have a re-referral to a committee that should have reviewed it. And my, you know, for the city and county issues, those usually are part of the public finance bill and the tax committee. So I guess I'm not sure what to do here, Representative Carlson.
Well, I think you raised the question, what I was prepared to do is modify the motion to re-refer to taxes. But since then, I've read the rule dealing with capital investment. What I think we could do procedurally, if it's the will of the committee, we could recommend the bill to pass and be re-referred to taxes. But before I sign the report, I would have a conversation with Representative Hausman, and if she felt she needs to see the bill, then we would reconsider that motion, and then we would send it to capital investment. If she's comfortable with it moving forward and just going to the Committee on Taxes, then I would sign the report, and that would be the result. If that's all right with the author, it looks like this bill raises a couple of additional hurdles, but you wouldn't be caught up with any deadlines. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, can I ask Representative Lincheski, what will taxes do with this? What will happen to taxes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, generally, the committee is very supportive of these kind of provisions. It just, I think it would save Representative Kath the stress of the re-referral on the floor. But it is the tax committee that oversees and passes all local debt issues. And members often get this confused because they think that's Representative Hausman's committee. And it is Representative Hausman's committee for state debt. For local debt, it's the tax committee. So I can't speak for everyone on the committee, but I think people would look favorably on this item. But it seems only fair that cities and counties would get to weigh in a public way on the idea of doubling their potential debt capacity, because that does, you know, net out to, if cities and counties use it, it's a property tax increase. I mean, that's the ultimate product of this. However, I've heard the testimony that this is a credit enhancement program, which is a little bit different than straight up local debt for building a project. So I think there's just enough questions that, you know, Representative Broad is the minority lead on the tax committee, and I guess I'd ask her maybe if she's willing to weigh in right now on the record a little bit, kind of, you know, her thoughts on this, because, you know, we certainly wouldn't want sort of a battle on the floor over this if it hasn't gone through its correct path. So if the chair would permit Representative Broad to sort of jump in, I think it might be helpful to think through how taxes might address this.
We have another question that I think I want to address first.
Okay. But,
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Marks. Oh, could I get, I want to get the question of a state obligation. I think I'll defer to our lead fiscal analyst, or Ms. Novakovic, whichever one wants to comment. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, the authorization here is for the state. It's increasing the amount of debt that the state essentially could guarantee. So it's a state issue here. As Mr. Freeman has stated, the state's not going to sell the bonds, but the state would be essentially backing up the bonds and might be putting cash in for a short period of time if there was ever a local problem. But the bonds would be issued at the local level, and I suppose I think an issue here yet, which I don't know the answer to, I'm assuming that any local government that's issuing this debt is going to have go through whatever procedures are currently in law for it to increase debt, so that I think at the local level it's increasing what the state can guarantee that local governments have to go through current law to obtain. And I'd be happy to be corrected if that's not correct.
I think in light of that, maybe I'll reconsider my thought of whether to sign the report or not. And I wish Representative Houseman were here. I think the safest thing to do is maybe refer it to her division. But Representative Murphy, you had your hand up before we take the action.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to assure Representative Lincheski that the cities and counties are always welcome to testify in the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Committee. And my memory serves me. I think the cities were in attendance that day, and there was no opportunity or no refusal to allow them to testify if they had wanted to. I also would like to point out that Representative Carlson usually has people willing to testify to come down to the table, and I don't see them here today either. So,
Mr. Chair,
I don't know that it's necessary, Mr. Chair, but I guess if we're going to have trouble on the floor, we'd rather have it before the floor than on the floor.
Representative Camp.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, I have met with the League of Minnesota Cities on this. They are in full support of this bill and how it is moving forward. But I do want to make sure, yes, before it receives that second reading, that it is fulfilling, you know, all the obligations, so we don't have any hurdles once we get there. The specific thing for me then is I believe that the re-referral, if we are going to look at that, would be Representative Houseman's, because my understanding of it in most of my discussions is that it is about a state capacity. It is not about a local capacity in the sense that they're going to change it. But it's the will of the committee.
We have another. I could simply lay the bill over, not send it to a division until we have a conversation with Representative Houseman. That would be another alternative. And then if she feels she needs to see it, I would refer it there. If she doesn't need to see it, we would reschedule it at our next meeting. And in the meantime, we could decide whether it needs to go to taxes or not, you know, in terms of whether that motion is relevant. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Lincheski.
You know, one other option is you could send on all the sections other than 13, 14, and 15 and remove. But I think I just want to be clear, and I know, Representative Murphy, that you would never stop public testimony, and you run a great committee, and I maybe misled the committee here. My concern isn't really the cities and counties elected officials, it's the residents, because they're the ones who would pay the increased debt. I think the cities and counties generally like more debt vehicles and like more options to do things. It's the residents of those communities who often don't understand it equates to a property tax increase. So, you know, another concern here would just be kind of how this plays out as the omnibus tax bill goes through. So I still, if the chair would allow it, I'd like to hear what Representative Broad has to think about all this, if we could.
I had missed her. We'll call on her. And then the more, as I see it, the more immediate question before us in this committee right now is the capital investment question.
There she is.
There she is.
Here we are. By golly. Okay, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Somebody better brief Representative Houseman on what
the question is. She's going to be walking into a firestorm here. Mr. Chairman, I actually think that the best course of action would be to send it to both, because I do think that there is a potential for an impact on both the state level and the local level. And especially after hearing Mr. Marks's testimony, the authorization is for the state. But if the state chooses only to back a certain amount of that authorization, then there is going to be a potential impact on the local level as well if the state caps that backing. So I think the best course of action, there's lots of time left for both the Capital Investment Committee and the Tax Committee, so it's not a matter of deadline. But we can kind of walk through the potential issues in both of those. I would think that would be pretty quick. But it seems to me, just in a soft look at and listening to the nonpartisan research staff who's been around and understands this stuff forward and backward and upside down, that there's a clear impact potential for both.
Yeah. And Representative Hausman is being brought up to date, but there are a couple of other people that wanted to comment. So, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Catherine, Mr. Freeman, if we took that section out, what's the negative effect on the cities and counties?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, the program currently has reached its $500 million limit, so we are not taking any new applications for bonds to be covered under this program and would not be able to unless that was increased.
Okay, thank you.
And let's see, Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chair, well, now that Representative Hausman's here, she's the one, but Capital Bonding Committee deals with general bonds of the state, which mean, and the specific requirement then is that you can then put a property tax charge across the total state to back it. These kinds of bonds are totally different, and I don't think they've ever been in the capital bonding. But now we have the real expert.
Representative Hausman, have you had a chance to be brought up to speed as to what the issue is? And the discussion was whether this bill needs to go to capital investment.
And the only question I had, with this new debt service guideline that quantifies all debt, I thought that it might be relevant, but he said it's not state debt. So my only question was, what happens, though, if you have no cash?
Then you go to the local.
There is no bank.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know for sure, but it seems to me it's probably never been used. I think it is a mechanism of guaranteeing some local bonds so that you have the whole state, as I understand it, as a backup,
not the bond.
And so therefore it would, but the state would then impose the local taxes back on the local jurisdiction. I understand. I think it just is a way of lowering the risk and lowering the bond a little bit. I think that's what the program is for. I suppose if we didn't have cash, we'd be scrambling to make the payments. But maybe those that operate the program could better answer that question.
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, members, this program is specifically written to be only a limited state backing of these bonds. And as Peter Sousen, the former Commissioner of Finance, when this program was created, I think 10 years ago, and I'm reminded that the program, when it was originally created, did go through the Tax Committee at that time. But he was very clear and made sure that the statute and the program agreements were written to be very clear that if there is no money in the state general fund, the state has no obligation to get money from elsewhere to back the bonds. It's only to the extent there's money available in the general fund.
That goes back to another question, I guess, that Representative Solberg or somebody asked. Representative Bryan.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that actually that answer tells us that it needs to go to both. Because when we have, whether it's general fund bond dollars or not, it seems to me that the authority is passed within our capital investment legislation. So to argue that this bill doesn't need to go through capital investment is interesting in terms of our authority or the backing that we're providing from the state. If we're not providing any backing from either property tax, income tax, or otherwise, then what's the rationale for the backing in the first place? That's, I guess I'm not understanding the mechanism for a partial backing. How do you go out to a bond market and say, okay, we're going to back this city up to this amount, and we don't know if the money's going to be there or not, so do what you will with the rates. How does that all work? I guess I'm confused on the process.
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rod, the program, these are general obligation bonds issued by the city or county, so they're backed by the full faith and credit pledge of that local government entity and the property taxes of that local government entity. the purpose for the program and the benefit to the cities and counties is that if there is a cash flow issue where the city or county for some reason didn't have the money to make its debt service payment, the state, to the extent there's money in the general fund, could step in, make that one payment, and then there's very specific language in the program about how the state would be repaid with interest through a state aid intercept or through a property tax levy that the local government would levy, and then when the money was collected, it would be repaid. So the rating agencies have rated this program basically one notch below the state's bonds. The local governments don't get the state's bond rating. They get one notch below that because exactly of the fact that it's not a full and complete pledge by the state to back these bonds. It's a limited pledge.
Just to follow up then, just mechanically, I'm trying to understand it. That was a great explanation. Thank you. So if the state hits its limit and can't back it, it immediately goes to the local government. And if they can't accomplish it or pay off their debt, where does it go?
Well, Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, at that point, the local government would be in default on their bonds, and the events that would ensue from that would happen, but it would have then no impact back on the state.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, then that just this has got to go to taxes, Mr. Chairman. I think that this is very clearly a tax issue for local government.
I think the immediate question is whether it needs to go to capital investment, and then if it does not need to go to capital investment, if Representative Lincheski wants to see it, that's what the motion would be. Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to put another little piece of information on the table, either in the New York Times business section this weekend, it said that municipal bonds are returning the highest interest of just about anything on the market. So they've considered to be a very good investment.
Very good. Representative Hausman, I think it's at this point, do you need to see it, do you think, in capital investment? And if so, we'll refer it there. If you don't feel you need to, then we will pass the bill if the committee, if that's the will of the committee, we refer it to taxes.
I would refer it to taxes.
Okay. Then, Representative Murphy, would you incorporate that in your motion to recommend it to pass and re-refer it to taxes?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
That's the request of the tax chair.
I'd like to cooperate. This gives
Representative
more practice.
Absolutely, and Mr. Chair, I look forward to that. I don't like any hurdles on the floor.
It's a friendly committee. I
absolutely.
Okay, Representative Murphy moves then that House File 2925, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank
you. One step rather than two, anyway.
Absolutely.
I think that's it. No further business before the committee. We are adjourned.